Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Racing Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Racing Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. We'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow, and our special guest, Mr. Michael Lampelli. I want to thank him for taking time out of his busy schedule to come on and share some market insights with us this evening. So I don't want to waste a lot of time. We're going to jump off into the USDA Fruit and Vegetable Truck Rate Report for this week. And without any further ado, we got a little bit of movement in a few markets that are showing some outright shortages. And with the Christmas holiday pressing upon us in the next few days, it could be an opportunity if you are one of those individuals that works over the holidays. Of course, you know there is money to always be made during the holiday season when everybody else is trying to get home. If you're one of those ones that don't necessarily have anyone to go home to, or you just enjoy making a little bit of extra over the holidays, some opportunities could be abound. So the markets that are showing some slight shortages are as follows, and we got quite a few. San Joaquin Valley, California, Central and South Florida, Idaho, Merrill County, Oregon, Upper Valley, Twin Falls, Burley District, Idaho, Minnesota, North Dakota, Red River Valley, and Columbia Basin, Washington. All of those markets that I just listed off are markets that are showing an outright shortage of trucks in those areas. So what that spells out and what that means for us is there could be some opportunities to be had in the spot market if we're working those markets. And if you're working, that might be a good place to maybe try to be delivering and getting your load right before Christmas Eve, if that's the case, so that you're going to be running over that Christmas holiday. You can have get you a good rate while you're at it, which I don't think you're going to have too big of a problem negotiating anywhere you are in the country if you plan on working over the holiday, but you may be able to add a couple of extra $100 to your bottom line if you are in those areas. Jumping over really quickly into the DAT report, first things first, fuel prices, they went down by 0.7 percentage points, so we're showing the national average of diesel fuel price at $3.05 per gallon. Trucks are keeping busy in these final weeks before the holiday. Van freight volumes were up more than 25% last week, and van rates were at an 11-month high. Reefer volumes have cooled slightly since Thanksgiving, but reefer rates are still at the highest point since June. And without any further ado, let's take a deeper dive and take a look and see how the spot market rates were performing for dry vans over the previous week. Starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we show outbound average spot market rates for dry vans at 169. Dropping to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we show an average spot market rate of 183. Coming out of the Midwest, leading the nation, showing an average rate of $2.15. Dropping down to the south central region of the United States, showing an average of $1.73. And coming out of the West Coast, we show an average of $1.88 on the spot market for dry vans. Jumping over really quickly into flatbed. The flatbed segment coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, we show outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $2.05. Dropping down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we show an average outbound spot market rate of $2.17. Jumping up into the Midwest, we show an average of $2.32 that leads the nation for flatbed. Dropping down to the South Central, showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.06. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we show an outbound average of $1.92 for flatbeds. And moving over to the final portion, the reefer segment of the report, coming out of the Northeast, we show an outbound spot market rate at $1.90. Coming out of the South East and Mid-Atlantic states, we show outbound spot market rates for reefers at $1.99. Coming out of the Midwest, leading the nation across all three segment types. Outbound spot market rate for reefers at $2.62 per mile. Moving out of the South Central, we show outbound spot market reefer rates at $2.06. And wrapping up, coming out of the left coast, showing an average of $2.30 per mile. And with that being said, let me go and grab my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, how are you this evening?
We're doing good. How are you, Rico?
Doing really good. Doing really good. Didn't get a chance to, well, maybe we'll say that for the end of the show. We'll let everybody know what we got planned for the new year, since we talked about it a little bit and a little bit of change. But we don't want to waste any time. Let's go ahead and bring on our esteemed guest, Mr. Michael Lampelli. Michael, good evening. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well, Rico. How you doing down there in Atlanta?
Doing really good. Doing really good. I know you guys been kind of digging out a little bit up there, up your
not
way.
As bad as New York. But, not as bad as New York, man. By the way, you know, Rico, I got a joke for you. We in Canada really feel, you know, we feel very blessed that America pays attention to us, especially in the morning when I watch the evening news. It seems like all the weather starts at the border. There's nothing above it. So when I watch the morning news, it's like, wow, everything starts at the border. Except when there's a winter blast, suddenly they blame us for it.
Yeah. You guys be sending that stuff down this way.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, hey, we got to show you the loving, man.
Well, listen, we definitely we wanted to kind of get you on, get you back on the show tonight, kind of pick your brain a little bit, try to see if we can make some sense out of what's been going on in the market, in the marketplace, as far as what potentially may be coming down the pike as far as trucking and maybe the economy, and see if you might be able to help make some sense out of all of the craziness that's been kind of going on over the past couple of weeks. And you know, they're screaming in a few publications about the transportation bloodbath that is taking place right now, as far as, you know, with the Celadon debacle and everything else that's going on. So kind of want to turn the show over to you for a few minutes and kind of see, you know, give us some insights on things that you see, and tell us what you think might be coming down our way.
Well, I think the number one word is going to be confusion. It's going to be confusion, I think, from now and forever. And what I'd like to say to everybody who's listening to the show tonight, all the brothers and sisters driving the trucks, is you're going to have to pay closer attention to what's going on around you than before. So I'm going to give you a quick little bookends just to give you an idea. In an article in July 24th of 2019, it said trucking industry was short more than 60,000 drivers, meeting demand at the end of 2018. This is July. Then you bookend to December and Celadon goes bankrupt, leaving 3,000 drivers jobless. So, of course, you're confused, because on one hand, they're telling us they're massively short of drivers. On the other hand, companies are going out of business. So everybody's getting confused, right, as to what's going on. And for those people out there who are trying to run businesses, like, you know, I don't get it. Things are swinging back and forth really, really fast. Now,
well, Mike,
one of
there's
the
a little bit of a difference,
yeah,
though, isn't there here? Excuse me for interjecting, but you've got the 3,000 drivers that were let go from Celadon's bankruptcy. I would imagine that most of them got jobs immediately. That's what we heard in the industry.
Well, they
were
gobbled
up.
Right. I mean, but that's exactly the point, is there is confusion in the marketplace. And I hope they did get jobs, by the way. I really do hope they did get jobs right away. Right. But I think for the independent people who are sitting there trying to run their 1, 2, 3, 5 rigs, they don't know which way to go. And then, of course, now you have, Rico, I'm sure you're very familiar with that, is Amazon now tells the sellers they can't use FedEx Ground.
Yeah, that made news yesterday down this way. They were talking about that.
Right. So you now have a retailer, or what's called an e-tailer, coming into the business. Now, I'm going to share with you, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but part of the challenges that's going to happen in freight, which is really going to be, I think, you know, depending on how you look at it, could be good or bad, is that there is now no longer just deliveries to home. So if you think of logistics, the way logistics is going to be done now in the future, now what you're getting is the e-tailers. And by the way, 50% of Walmart's business is now online.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that high.
Right. So what you're getting now is they're now doing three types of shipping. So there's shipping of I'm going to order online and they're going to deliver me a box. But the volume is so high that they now said, okay, we'll go to a different one. So I think it's I can't remember which one it is. But now what they do is they stuck boxes like lockers at different retailing outlets where people can now go to the lockers and unlock it and take out their packages. Now they've got it going direct to store. So you can order online and it goes direct to store. So if you're a trucking company, you're like, okay, which one do I do? So see how this is going to get very, very confusing. And please remember that the online shopping is still only about, I think only about 15% of the consumers buying. So you can just imagine what's going to happen when it gets to 20%, 25%. So this causes a lot of confusion. One of the things that I was saying earlier is my background's economics, so I tend to watch the Purchasing Managers Index. And, you know, once a month we'll report that. Now, I'll tell everybody listening, the PMI is a very important index because it tracks the inventories, it tracks the orders, it tracks everything. And what it's saying is, even though the United States has had about 127 months of consecutive economic expansion, the PMI has actually been contracting for the past 4 months straight. And the numbers between the PMI and the overall economy indicates that the November, which is 48.1, corresponds to 1.5% increase in real domestic product. But at the same time, manufacturing is contracting. So I would tell everybody, even though you're doing well, pay very, very close attention to the data because it could swing around real fast.
Yeah.
Rico, you got questions or something?
I'm sorry. I was just trying to take in what it is that you were saying. It's basically
what I'm suggesting to Barbara. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
I'm simply saying to everybody listening is that if you go back 20 years, the economy moved a lot slower. So you had time to adjust. You don't have that time anymore. Yes, you may be driving a truck, but you actually have to pay attention to the data very closely.
It's true. So, everything changes so quickly now. That's the issue.
Absolutely.
So I mean,
right now, it's one of those situations to, it's kind of difficult. It's really difficult to try to gauge right now as far as whether or not we are going to, if we're leading towards prosperity or if we're leaning towards contraction and a recession. And a lot of the numbers have kind of been on, when you go back and you actually look at the stock market as far as the companies are concerned, if we don't have another situation where people are actually cooking the books, most trucking companies that are reporting are showing kind of a steady growth pattern with like a 2 to 3% growth year over year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of been like a steady little incline, but. You know, we're just kind of concerned as to how long is that going to maintain?
Well, I think first off, here's the part that I would take away from this. For while the government and the central and all those guys are trying to push the economy to expand and they're working really hard, the part that concerns me, and I think it should be noted, is you got GDP growth between 1.5% and 2%. Well, that's not a whole hell of a lot of room to maneuver if something goes wrong. right? It's not as if the economy is expanding at 3-4%, and if there's a recession, it'll slide back from 4 to 3. If you're at 1.5 and 2 and you slide by 1, you're back to 0.5. You're not far from a contraction. So that's one of the things. The other part is, I mean, for the trucking industry, the change is that the average age of a driver is now 55.
Right.
So how much longer are they going to stay on the road? Right.
That's
so
a good one.
Yeah, I mean, you got to consider that if the average age is 55, and you got, you know, you're trying to bring in new blood, but I would, you know, if I'm right now, and the way I'll do my business, because again, I love data and I swallow data, and I look at my books, and if 80% of my business is coming from one region, I better pay very close attention to the industries I'm hauling for. And I would categorize my clients by industry, not by client. So I'd look at my 80-20 rule and say, if 80% of my business is coming from 20% of my clients, and if 20, then I'd categorize my clients by the industry they're in. Am I making sense, Rico?
Yes. So you need to be breaking down your customers segment by segment type, by what type of industry that they're in. Or to be even more specific, making sure that you're utilizing, understanding your SIC codes and everything.
Absolutely. You got to analyze data. Imagine those poor farmers and the grain haulers that did not expect a China tariff war that hit the soybean market between the eyes.
Mm.
They're hauling the freight in September. Everything's cool. Not a problem.
And let me say this, because we got quite a few callers on the line tonight, and I want to make sure that everybody understands and knows that if you want to get in, if you want to ask a question of me, Mike, or of Chuck, all you have to do is press the number 1. That puts you in the call queue that lets us know that you want to participate. And we always welcome your participation here on the show. So don't be afraid. Don't be scared. You can press the number 1. We'll weave you right into the conversation. And it's always, I always like to say, especially in a group setting, there's no such thing as a dumb question. Don't ever feel like, well, I have a dumb question or this is a silly question, because you never do know what kind of conversation or what that question may spark. And you may think it may be a stupid question or a silly question, but 9 times out of 10, a lot of people may have that very exact same question. Or you may actually have been gifted with something that's going to spurn or generate a conversation to go in a direction that's going to get us more information. So don't be shy to press number 1 and get involved with it. We welcome you here on the show.
My motto for a long time has been, there's only one dumb question, the one you didn't ask.
Good point.
Hey, there you go. There you go. So going forward, is there any industries that you may have identified that may be a little bit more volatile than others, or just for people to kind of be more conscious of?
Well, I mean, you got to break down the manufacturing sector by a couple of areas, and the PMI is telling us that one of the slow areas is the transportation components. So let me start with one category at a time. And when you're talking about regular, you know, a lot of the consumables we get is shipped in from overseas, China and other places like that. And that's still continuing on, even with the tariffs and everything else. That's still continuing on. That really hasn't stopped. The area that's going to be a problem is going to be, as an example, Boeing has just suspended production of its 737 MAX. Now, they've suspended it till April. So you can think of all the haulers who've been, you know, hauling for suppliers of Boeing and now suddenly they're getting caught in a storm, because Boeing has suspended manufacturing till April on the 737 MAX, and that 737 is their bloodline. That is their lifeline of a product. I think and I want to make sure everybody understands one thing. The USMCA has not been ratified. So there's still confusion within the auto sector as to what's going to happen. Things are continuing right now. But if you look at the overall news, a lot of plants are closing and opening so rapidly, it's really hard to keep up what's going on. So if you're hauling freight for the car guys, pay very close attention to what's going on underneath it, because they might, you know, they might have a plant, everything's going great. Then all of a sudden there's a, you know, a dust up storm between the Congress and the White House over USMCA. And then, you know, the USMCA, now McConnell says he's not going to approve it till the new year. So there's still no firm rules on how all of this is supposed to work. So especially if you're doing work in the auto sector, pay close attention.
It's pretty volatile right now.
And it's going to get more volatile because there's so many trade agreements going on that, you know, look, here's a good example. And I'm not political of any type, but President Trump was over in Europe. He didn't like something. And the next thing he knows, he's threatening tariffs on French goods of about $2.5 billion worth of goods. So out of nowhere, you know, potential trade wars looming, and they didn't know if it was going to go forward or not. So for the guys hauling the stuff, you're like, well, wait a minute, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
Right. Right.
So what used to be counted on is not so counted on anymore.
Well, we got someone that does want to ask a question. We're going to go to a caller. Caller calling in from the 912 area code. You're up live. What's your name and where you're calling from and how can we help?
Yeah, this is Steve from Georgia, and thanks for taking my call. And it's good to talk with you guys again. And I wanted to ask your caller, I know there's no definite answer to this, and everything is a prediction, but from the data that you researched and the data that you come across, what would you say a prediction of how long the recession will last? Once it ever hit the trucking industry?
You know, that's a great question. I'll tell you something. That's a great question. So I'll tell you something. You go back to about the 1990s, a manufacturer typically had 3 months of supply on their shelves if there was a recession. That's why recessions in the 90s took so long to work out, because, you know, it would take 6 months to 9 months for a recession to correct itself because the manufacturers had so much inventory on their shelves. But if you fast forward now 20, 25 years later, the manufacturer has very little inventory on the shelves. That's why I was saying the PMI is so balanced that even if there's a recession of 1 or 2 quarters, there's not a lot of inventories on the shelves. So if depending on the type of recession, that's a very important question. If it's just a standard slowdown, people are not shopping as much, I'd say, you know, 1 to 2 quarters and it starts to strengthen back up again or equalize. If it's a deeper financial issue like we had in 08, that's a different story. So I don't think the next recession is going to be very deep. I think it'll be something where there'll be a contraction. And just to be clear, by the way, there's no joke. A recession is when my neighbor loses their job. A depression is when I lose my job.
Right. Right.
And, you know, trucking has already been in we are the
a recession for a while, yeah.
Yeah, the truck has been in a recession, and we are always the leaders in and out. So
yeah.
We will feel it. We felt it before. We felt it a year ago. And as we begin to climb out, and I actually think that the writing is on the wall for us, if you read between the lines, I think we're going to be climbing out sometime in 2020 of the situation we're in. I think that just glancing tonight, Coyote, one of their chief executives, he's predicting that the spot markets are going to start rising in the first quarter of 2020. There's been an awful lot of excess capacity that has gotten chewed up bit by bit. The more you start looking into it, the shippers have had, you know, all the power has gone back to the shippers, and now all of a sudden, for the first time since 1985, when deregulation happened in the USA and Canada to follow suit, all of a sudden there are barriers to entry for trucking. Remember, up until 1985, right after 1985, or approximately 1980, I guess, I'm sorry, 1980, when deregulation happened in the US, they took away all barriers to entry. You needed a truck, and in most jurisdictions, you could get a interstate authority or intra or interstate authority easier or as easy as you get a hunting license. And that's all stopped now because of this insurance issue that we're all dealing with. And now all of a sudden, the insurance companies are holding the cards as to barriers to entry, and that is starting to clean out the markets. And even the big guys, like the big, big, big guys, the Swifts, the Warners, the Hunts, don't think they're not feeling it. Not they're self-insured, but they have reinsurance companies that pay anything after X number of dollars. You know, they may be paying the first $3 million or $5 million or whatever their deal is, but after that they have to go to a reinsurance company. And I know for a fact that these reinsurance companies are starting to kick back because they're losing money and they're starting to raise rates. So everything is changing very quickly. And to the men and women that are out there listening, if you want my prediction, is that I think things are going to turn around sooner rather than later, because this is going to take the capacity out of the trucking industry.
So Chuck, I got a question for you. Freight rates move up and down pretty fast. From your experience, how volatile and how fast will the volatility be in the insurance market?
Oh, it's there. It's volatile. We're hearing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Rico is a prime example. He's the guy that everybody wants to insure, and he got raised. And he does everything by the book. My insurance agent, when I spoke to him last week, he had a client that was getting a 200% increase.
Gee.
Because he's a bad operator. He doesn't understand that, you know, rear-ending people in Chicago is not a good thing to do.
So I got another question for you, but to Rico and to Chuck and Steve. That's your name, right, Steve?
Yes, sir.
So from your perspective right now, with all of the weather-related issues going on, how fast are these weather-related issues causing problems on the insurance market?
I don't think they do. It's not the weather. What happens?
It's not the weather.
Problem?
So
yeah.
Yeah,
it's
I don't
the
think
nuclear
it's the
verdict
so much. But one thing that and I think that I can't remember. I remember reading a story. I think it may have been Swift that got sued here recently about them forcing drivers to drive in inclement weather. But you that's one of those things as. You got to remember, you're the captain of that ship. And if it doesn't feel safe to you, if you don't feel safe, whether you're a company driver, lease operator, or owner operator, I got one rule. Ever since I have bought my own truck and everything, I don't carry chain. If it's bad enough to chain up, it's good enough for me to park. That's just been, you know, but I don't go into areas where chains are absolutely mandatory either. You know, I'm just running back and forth between Georgia and North Carolina, so I don't run into those situations where you have to have chains to go to even enter certain states or whatever. But even when I was running all over on the spot market, if it was bad enough to chain up, I'd just rather park because I just never felt comfortable enough chancing. You know, there's no freight that's so hot that won't cool off in a ditch. So I just always. exercise extreme caution on that part. I had no desire to be in a ditch waiting on a tow truck to come and get me in that kind of weather or anything like that. What's the thing that's been affecting the insurance is these crazy verdicts everywhere you go, especially here in the United States. And if you come through Atlanta, I don't know for all of the out of work singers and rappers or whatever, all the commercials for insurance companies that own the radio, it's absolutely crazy. I mean, the main thing that they're focusing on, hit by a big truck. It's no more regular car accidents. Everybody wants to know, hey, if you were hit by a big truck. Matter of fact, my neighbor, he came over this Sunday, gave me a calendar. You know, he's canvassing the neighborhood, but he's an attorney. Cameras in the neighborhood, and right here on this calendar, I'm looking dead at it. Track the trailer accident.
I throw him off my porch.
I do agree with you, Rico. I definitely do agree with you because, you know, from my perspective, I'm kind of like you. I mostly run just Georgia, Alabama, parts of Florida and Mississippi and Louisiana. That's pretty much my backyard. But I've been in business now a little over 3 years. And this last time I went to renew my insurance from a one truck operator, I was paying a little over $14,000 a year. But this time, whenever I renewed it this time, my insurance dropped down to just a little bit over $8,000.
Wow.
And with the same coverage and everything. And so I began to kind of, ask questions about that, because I was really concerned about that. And one of the things that the insurance company did tell me that is because of the area that I run and the safe driving, of course, with no accidents, incidents, and all of that, they really deemed me as a safe driver in that perspective. But they did let me know that once you begin to start adding other drivers on, of course, the insurance are going to become higher in the area. And one of the things that they did advise me on is that they deem me as a low risk, meaning that, anything can happen. Don't get me wrong, anything can happen and anything that can take place. And I agree with these nuclear verdicts that's been going on against the insurance company is causing the rates to increase. But one of the advice that they told me, say, continue to keep doing what you're doing, continue to keep drive slow, continue to stay in your area that you're staying in, and you'll see your insurance pretty much staying the same or either dropping. And so that's coming from my perspective in that area.
Great points.
So all of these points converge, and that's why I said to everybody out there, the business of trucking used to be you sit behind a wheel. But, Steve, I think you're pointing out something, which is the variables of insurance are one other variable you've got to keep a very close eye on. So if you wrap it all up, you say, okay, I literally have to become an economist to drive a truck.
Mm.
I have to know – what's going on in my insurance market? What's going on in my gas market? What's going on with my suppliers? What's going on my – it's no longer I just drive a truck. You guys are literally economists, and you are the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
So you got to – that's why I've always said data, data, data. Now, the interesting part is you can make a lot of money doing that. Why? Because I said this, I think, a while back, Rico, if you recall – I said to everybody listening, it may be better for you to turn down a load than carry it at a loss.
Right. Absolutely.
So if you know your numbers, and somebody says, hey, would you haul this for a buck? You say, no, my costs are $1.10. I'm not going to haul it for a buck.
Yeah.
So opportunity cost.
Now,
go ahead, Rico.
It's going to be really interesting now, especially with the ELDs actually taken into effect. This week, it's going to be interesting to see, and I'm not going to have an opportunity to really see how much of an effect that it's going to have on the open spot market. So that's where you guys, the listeners, will come in that can help us, kind of gauge what's taking place. But are we going to see a little bit more of a spike in rates? Because now, every little thing with the ELD, it's quite different from the AOBR, and every little thing with the ELD is tracked. I mean, the truck rolls 0.1 miles, and it's showing that you're driving is detected. And with the AOBR, you used to have could get like a 5 mile grace period before that thing would kick in.
Right. By the way, Rico, I got to tell you a story. I did some work with the Department of Logistics, the U.S. DOT Department of Logistics back about 1997, 98 or something like that. And I said to them one day, there's going to be trackers in the trucks and they're going to know everything. And the guy said to me, no way, they'll never do it. Nobody will. I said, you guys are not going to stop technology. I said, one day they're going to know if the driver takes a fart, they're going to know it. Because you're going to go, wow, he's 1 pound lighter. So I think, go ahead.
Sorry, I got a text message that Kate just came in wanting to know, Michael, what do you do? We don't really cover this part of the industry, and maybe if you got any insight to it, it would be helpful for him.
But he was wanting to know how does tankers look? How does the things look in the chemical tanker division?
I think, again, that it's becoming a volatile market, not because of the chemical tankers, but because the Dry Baltic Index, which is the index that tracks everything, is all over the map. Okay, so, like, I mean, if you look at the Baltic Dry Index, which is it's issued daily, it's a London-based exchange, and it tracks all the cargo. What's happening is that the companies are being exchanged around like cookies. You got one company going out of business, one company buying. The chemical industry itself, I think consumption is still going to continue to grow. And that's because while the boomers are coming into retirement, there's this huge swath of people now coming into their consumption age. So I think from the chemical industry itself, I think it's going to do okay. I think it's going to be moving around. So I would tell anybody who's hauling chemicals, again, keep a close eye on the Baltic Dry Index, and it'll tell you if the chemical shipping industry, if the cargo containers are coming into a problem. But overall, I think in the next 5 years, there's so much technological expansion in autos, as an example, Tesla and others, or with you know, green energy. There's so much expansion in technology that all that does require chemicals. Whether people like it or not, you need chemicals to build solar panels.
Michael, I have to interject here a second. You're right on one, you know, as far as chemicals, but where there's going to be huge disruption in the tanker industry is on tankers hauling fuel, because there's a big push right now in the automotive manufacturing world to produce green cars, either that are powered by electricity or that are getting umpteen miles per gallon compared to the cars and SUVs that we all grew up with. And as a result, we're not going to need the amount of tankers hauling fuel, both gasoline and diesel, that we have been.
But guess what you will need?
What's that?
The chemicals to produce the batteries.
Yeah, good point. You know,
so you're just substituting one for the other.
I don't know what form those chemicals, if they come in a liquid form or powder. I really don't know.
But it'll be chemicals nonetheless, and it will be mass quantity.
Yeah. It may not might not be gasoline, that's all.
Well, no, I mean, there's going to be plastics, and that's an oil derivative.
Yep.
Right. Right. No, so not just talking about gasoline. He's talking about, like, everything, like sulfuric acid, stuff like that. Any kind of bulk chemicals.
Exactly. So for your caller, I'd say to him that I think the chemical industry, the chemical hauling, is going to be pretty good, and that, you know, regardless of everything, there's more people and more. We're at 7 billion people on the planet today. And I don't care what anybody tells me, you need chemicals to produce.
True.
I agree.
So it's just a question of, if you're hauling for a container company, just make sure they're still liquid themselves. They have the ability to pay their bills. You know, you might be hauling it, but you may not be getting paid for it.
Right.
Great point.
But I think, Chuck, you make a great point. The barriers to entry are now becoming market-driven versus regulatory-driven.
Right.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, and I had someone call me yesterday, as a matter of fact. They were talking about they want to get into the industry, and they are saying that they was asking me, well, when's a good time to get in? And I was like, well, any time's a good time. Right now is the main thing that you got to worry about is whether or not you're going to be able to get the insurance to get in.
Yeah. Data. Everybody's going to have to know their costs in and out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, we've seen enough recessions in our life economic-wise. But I think now when you're looking at example, the pissing battle between Amazon and FedEx, we don't yet know how that's going to affect the trucking industry.
Well, not only
well, the freight will just go somewhere
else.
There's
also a little bit of a battle. There's also a little bit of a queef between Amazon and Walmart as well.
Oh yeah,
where the you know the Walmart's kind of put applying a pressure to some of their suppliers, saying that if you're doing business with Amazon and vice versa, that you know we don't necessarily care to do business with you any longer.
So I got a question for you, Rico. Amazon is now getting into the freight business. Are they hiring the drivers as salaried people, or are they doing owner operators?
Owner operators. Which is
there's no salaried people anywhere.
Which,
even
which,
in their
which is,
warehouses,
which,
the those
thing
are
about
all...
it. The thing about it that's really the other caveat to our industry that we have to be mindful of, and one of the things that Hank Seaton has been kind of warning us about as well, is that the owner operator model is really under attack, and the key component to that is. I think that you got a lot of people that were owner operators because this is what we combat on this show. The whole purpose of this show was to try to serve as some type of as a form of education to try to help inform people because when I first got into this industry, I was really shooting from the hip. I didn't have a clue as to what cost per mile was. What price per gallon. I didn't know any of that stuff. I just knew I knew how to drive a truck. I knew I could get the equipment or get the freight from point A to point B in a safe manner. I knew I could do that. But as far as numbers and all this other stuff that we're trying to get into and try to help inform people with here on this show, that was something that was nowhere in my lexicon. I didn't have any idea, any clue of it. And I think what you have, what has happened, a lot of people that have gotten into trucking kind of fit that profile to a degree. And because a lot of people don't know or understand what personal responsibility is, and we always feel like we got to put whatever situation we got ourselves into, we got to find somebody to blame. And I think that has catapulted a situation where the government has gotten involved in certain municipalities and try to come in and say, okay, don't worry, owner-operator truck driver, we'll save you. And whenever that happens, look out.
So
I'm going to finish this point.
So you
have people that are looking for the government to help bail them out because they've made bad business decisions, bad business practices, because they didn't know what the hell they were getting themselves into. They didn't know what they were doing, or they just outright allowed themselves to be taken advantage of because they thought that it made sense at the time without having a comprehensive knowledge of what they were involving themselves into. And so now I feel like that was the catalyst to begin this whole assault on the owner-operator model is because, okay, well, you guys don't know how to run a business, so let us now these big companies are taking advantage of you and doing all this other stuff to you, so we must protect you from the big bad bully. So what we'll do is we'll come in, and now we're going to make everybody, we'll strip away all of the benefits of being an independent owner operator or an independent business person, and now we'll make you an employee. I don't necessarily want to sign up to be an employee. I enjoy my freedom. I enjoy being able to make decisions for myself and about my business. But I understand more about the errors of my ways before, but I think that because the threshold was so, the bar was at one point in time so low to get into the industry, and people coming into the industry uninformed about business and don't really know about business, then that's kind of the situation that has devolved and we've gotten ourselves into now with the government injecting itself into deciding whether or not we're going to even have an owner-operator model left in this country after a little while.
Yeah, I mean, they do it to fear. Now, I got a question to everybody listening. That includes you, Rico. How are the drivers covered for insurance? And I'm talking about benefit insurance, health insurance. Like, I'm really curious to understand. You're an owner-operator. what type of insurance do you have for yourself and your family? In other words, you know, benefits,
well, you
insurance, Medicaid.
It's up to you.
You have to buy it on open market.
Personal decision.
You have to buy it on open market. What a lot of people do, if they have a spouse that has a decent job, then of course they're covered under the spouse's insurance. But if you're not fortunate enough to be in that situation, then you have to go to the open market and go and purchase insurance. You know, you have to go purchase your insurance, whether it be your health insurance or whether it be occupational hazard insurance or whether it be disability insurance. You know, long-term disability insurance. That's something that you have to. That's a cost that you have to endure on your own.
So I got an interesting question then. You know, if you're looking at Amazon, as you said, Chuck, they're going to go owner-operators. How is the ruling in California, the AB5, the Uber rule, going to affect all this entire situation? Because what's the difference between an Uber driver and a truck driver who's driving for one company only?
It's exactly what's going on in California. You're right on the money there. The Uber drivers are going to have to work for Uber.
No. Uber now is required to give them health insurance and everything else.
Yeah, so they're going to
pay them a minimum wage.
They become basically, they're going to become employees.
So you mean independent drivers, and this is why I'm getting that point, which is how is this rule, and Enrico, maybe you could do some research for the next, how is this rule being carried through to the independent operators who might be carrying 95% of their loads for one particular company?
Well, from what I understood.
Oh, Steve. Hi, Steve.
From what I understood and some of the things that I heard about that is that Uber is fighting that they are not a taxi company. They're just a software company.
That's right.
And because of that, they are saying that the core issue of their job is not moving people from point A to point B, but they're just a software company. And that's how they're angling it to get away from the AB5 in California.
So, Steve, from your perspective then, would that type of logic then begin to extend to 3PL operators who might say, wait a minute, I'm a 3PL. I don't own these trucks. But as Rico just said, you know, logic and politicians don't always go well together.
That's true. That is so true. That is so true, and I think, you know, and I think the way they are looking at it in California with AB5 is that whatever the core operation is, that you're not able to, you're not able to contract anyone in the area, but some are saying it was just an unintended consequence against the trucking industry. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I don't agree with the rule. I really don't agree with the rule, because if it was nationwide, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be in business today, to be honest with you.
Well, I think it's different, though, Steve. I think what they're trying to do is, you'll be in business. It's the person who has their truck on with Landstar or with Swift or whoever, and they're leased on to a carrier, or Prime is an example. I know that in Canada, we actually call them brokers or owner-operators that are leased on with companies like Prime in California, were told they either had to sell their truck to Prime or get out or, you know, one or the other, because there was no provision for them after the 1st of January to be employed in the state of California as an owner-operator, at least to Prime. In your case, you're no different than Rico or me. In the fact, we're fleet owners. Whether you have one truck or 40 trucks or 4,000 trucks, you're a fleet owner, and you work for companies that pay you, and that's your business. And they don't really. So what the government has done in California, they put people in a situation. They're not able to go and get their own authority and insurance, and they're not allowed to lease on to a company with their own truck unless you do some real convoluted thing. And what you have to do is you have to lease your truck on with a company. the company would have to pay you as a driver and then pay you a separate check for leasing your truck. And
right.
I can tell you now, companies that are trying to do that, there are no big companies that I know of in the state of California doing that. And companies that are going, smaller companies are going to do that, they are going to end up in court. And the state of California is going to challenge them doing that, and it's going to cost them a lot of money. So my best advice to any of our listeners running trucking companies in California that are going to do this, and I've been through a similar thing here in Ontario, which I'm not going to get into tonight, but it cost me almost $1 million, pretty close to $1 million in the 80s, is to operate that way prior to deregulation in Ontario. And I don't suggest doing it. If you've got to operate that way, find another way to run your business. It's going to be cheaper, because when the state comes around and they're looking for money, and remember, when you go to court with the government, whether it's a state government or federal government, they're fighting you with your money, and you can't win. You're getting in the ring with an 800-pound gorilla. I was very fortunate in my case. I actually did win. But I don't suggest it to most people because it costs, you know, it ended up costing me a lot of money to prove my point.
So Chuck, to your question, then, you know, there's the big freight that can fight these battles. But if you were Steve and you suddenly brought on board four guys and you contracted them, how would the rule you're talking about affect him?
Well, if Steve was in California or perhaps New Jersey, or this whole thing spread the way they're talking about having it spread, then what would happen is if Steve went out and hired four owner-operators and they leased on with Steve's under Steve's authority, he in California as of January 1st, he's not allowed to do that. Those drivers need to actually be employees of Steve.
Right.
They cannot be independent owner-operators leased on with Steve's transport.
Wow. Right.
Which
that's
has been a model
right.
of – yeah, that's been a model of our industry since – my God, I think since the 40s anyways, that I know of.
And right now, to kind of get around that rule, right now they're having the owner-operators to move out of state and establish a resident in another state to get around that rule. And but at the same time, I think eventually they're going to even crack down on that also.
Well, you're right, and there's a lot of threat, and this is a Canadian talking about American politics. There's a lot of threat that the majority of federal Democratic politicians are all in favor of having this a nation. And I'm not saying this to get you to swing your vote. It really doesn't matter. And
Steve
I'm just,
can't vote in Canada. Don't worry about it.
But the word that I heard is that there's a big push in the Democratic Party to get this legislation drafted if and when they get into power throughout the country from state to state. It reared its ugly head in New Jersey. They shut it down temporarily, or they postponed it temporarily, but it could spread, because this way the state governments and to some extent the federal government would get employee deduction taxes on all these owner-operators that are leased on with companies. Again, if you're operating under your own authority, you're okay. It's the ones that are leased on with – yeah,
yeah,
it's the you know, Landstar is a great model. They're a wonderful company. We do business with them every single day. We have listeners I know that are leased on to Landstar. They are probably out of every carrier out there. It's a total owner-operator model, and probably the finest drivers or some of the finest drivers in the entire United States and Canada are Landstar drivers. They have very, very high standards. And if this happens, their business model really goes down the drain. They can't,
yeah,
because they're non-asset. They own some trailers, but as far as I know, Landstar does not own one power unit there. It's totally now they do have some fleet owners on there. They'll have people that may have 10 or even 20 trucks leased on to Landstar. And those ones would be all right because they have company drivers on those trucks. But I know we have listeners that have, you know, one or two trucks on, leased on with Landstar. And if this in California, they can't operate as of the 1st of January. And if this thing spread, this, and I'm going to call it craziness, this craziness spread throughout the United States, then their whole business model would go down, you know, it would go kaput.
It's the times there are changing, my friends.
100%.
You know?
Yes, it is.
But really what's happening now, just so you know, what Chuck is talking about, I think it was a great conversation. We should probably do some regulatory updates because the regulatory structure is going to change fast. It's not just for the trucking industry. It's what's called the gig economy. And the gig economy, which is basically everyone is independent, right? I mean, you got people working online, everything else, is now the government trying to say, listen, we are losing a boatload of taxes because people are voluntarily declaring their income, right? If I'm working online and I'm doing, you know, editing, whatever it is online, I'm declaring my income, but I don't have a slip from my employer that says how much I earned. So I'm totally voluntarily declaring it. So what you're getting is the government trying to say, listen, we got to find a way to bring the gig economy into a structured process so we can collect a lot of the taxes we're losing. But I think, Chuck, you made a great point, which is these regulatory changes, what disruption are they going to cause in the market?
100%.
You know, so, you know, as if you didn't have enough things to keep you up at night, now you got this to keep you up at night, that some bozo is going to stand up in Congress and says, guess what I'm going to do today? Oh, God, no.
but I feel this way that we are smart Americans, and regardless of what come our way, I feel that we will figure out a way to make it work. That's how I feel about it, regardless of what come our way.
You know, look, I live in Canada, and I'm going to give you two very quick jokes. First off, years ago, I saw an interview between an American journalist and a Canadian journalist, and the Canadian journalist says to the American journalist, we sort of feel like you don't pay enough attention to us. And the American journalist said, do you know what happens when we pay attention to countries? Do you really want us to pay attention? and my favorite, but I tell my fellow Canadians who may sometimes criticize U.S., I said, let me put it to you this way. In Iraq, two men argue over a goat and 60 people die. In the United States, they had an election in 2001 that separated the presidency by 500 votes and not one person got hurt. That's a democracy.
Yep. In its truest form.
Well, gentlemen, I'm looking at the clock. And
Steve, be careful. Be safe, my friend.
Blown by it.
Thank you.
So, Chuck, well, first of all, Michael, you want to tell the good people how they can get in contact with you? If you want to leave any contact information?
My contact info is michael.lampel, L-A-M, like Michael, P like Peter, E-L, at gmail.com. By all means, you got questions, you need answers, send it up, no problem. I'll do some research. I'll send it back down to you. And I highly recommend everybody, you know, tune in from now on, because I think what we did tonight was we sort of explored that we're going to be broadening the conversation beyond just freight rates, because I think, you know, you guys are now economists. You're not driving trucks. You're economists, because you can tell us what's going on in the economy better than the damn politicians.
Absolutely.
Very true.
Absolutely. Chuck, your turn. Tell the folks how they can get a hold of you. And
sure can. You can email me, chuck@traffix.com, T-R-A-F-F-I-X, or you can phone me at 1-800-388-4352, and my extension is 203. You need that extension to get hold of me. I get back to everybody, so reach out.
Well, quickly, just want to drop this note. Next week, looking at the calendar, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to pull off a show or not. We'll see what we can do.
Oh, actually, no, I don't think we are, Rico. Next Wednesday is Christmas Eve. I think we better we'll do one. And the following week is New Year's Day, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a conundrum.
But next
so
year,
I think we're coming back. I guess we're coming back in January.
Sounds like a plan.
Well, yeah, but
next
then,
year we're coming back. We're switching days up. I think it's going to be easier for us, and I think that we may be able to actually pull off the video portion. So we're going to be coming back to you guys on Tuesdays instead of Wednesdays at 7 p.m. So we're going
Chuck,
to switch up the days to Tuesday instead of Wednesday.
Yeah, and I think for the next session, which is after the first, Chuck, prepare a couple of things involving new regulations that are going to come into effect that everybody should know about.
Well, we've got Hank Seaton, who is our resident lawman, and he's one of the best transportation lawyers in all America. He spent decades on the Hill, and he knows his way around. And I'm a lightweight compared to Hank.
Well, not unless I've seen you eat a steak. You ain't no lightweight.
Well, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you guys for tuning in to the show tonight. God bless you. Good night. Be safe out there. And we'll talk to you, God willing, next year. So happy
Merry Christmas,
happy
and Happy
New
Year.
All that good stuff.
Catch on the
Merry Christmas. And if you hit a deer, take it home.
Good night. God bless.
God bless you.
Bye, guys. Bye, Rico. Have a Merry Christmas.
Bye. You too, Mike.